discussion and possible introduction of proposed zoning ordinances. Proposed ordinances, not zoning ordinances.
So good morning.
Morning.
This morning, we have several proposed ordinances that we'd like to have consideration for introduction and discuss. The first is an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 115, Articles 3 and 27, Sections 115-15 and 115-210 regarding a determination by the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission as to permitted uses. This is just to clarify, right now there's the ability for both the Board of Adjustment and the Planning and Zoning Commission to make determinations on uses. So if something is not specifically called out in the zoning code, that they can consider if it's something similar in nature and then consider that to be a permitted use. Right now, we've had some go through the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then some go through a special use exception as a determination through the Board of Adjustment. So the proposed ordinance is to clean that up and have it just go through the Planning and Zoning Commission as they typically deal with the uses.
So it takes the Board of Adjustment?
Correct. It removes that from the Board of Adjustment and just gives it to the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Okay. Anyone want to introduce that? Anybody want to introduce it? Mr. Burton introduces it. Thank you.
Okay. The second.
We should read that.
Read the short title.
Yes. Okay. An ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 115, Articles 3 and 28, Roman numeral sections 115-15 and 115-210 regarding a determination by the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission as to permitted uses.
Just one correction.
And that is section 27.
Yes.
27.
27.
Yes.
Anybody want to introduce it?
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Burton, introduce it. Next.
So the next is an ordinance to amend the code regarding assisted living facilities. Right now in the new zoning, the commercial zoning districts, it is a permitted use. In the current residential districts, it is a special use exception. What this would do is take the special use exception, make any assisted living nursing facilities conditional use in the residential zones, and then make it a permitted use in the existing C1 and CR1 zoning districts.
This one was actually we had a definition that talked about convalescent homes, nursing homes, or homes for the aged, and those terms weren't defined anywhere in our code currently. They were used but not defined. When we went through the new commercial district process, we actually came up with a definition of nursing and similar care facilities, and then there's sub-definitions under that heading for assisted living facilities, extended care facilities, and other similar types of uses. So now we not only have good definitions, but we've got a process where they all go through planning and zoning and county council.
And then more special use exceptions.
Correct.
Yep.
Any questions?
I like it.
Oh, that's a, I do too. Mr. Moore, give me a short title.
Yes, and please watch, make sure I read these correct. An ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 115, Articles 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, 11A, and 12, all Roman numeral sections, 115-22, 115-23, 115-31, 115-32, 115-39, 115-40, 115-55, 115-56, 115-63, 115-64, 115-71, 115-72, 115-77, 115-80, 115-83.2, 115-83.6, 115-87, and 115-88 assisted living ordinance.
I can't introduce it.
I will introduce it.
Mr. Burton introduces it.
Unless you think that's really complicated, we had to list all those sections because there's one section where we add about four words, and then there's the corresponding section of the special use exception where we had to delete about four words. Sure. But we had to do it in each district. That's why it was so long.
Shoot.
I'll second.
So the next ordinance is an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County. In this case, is as the comprehensive plan is moving forward, we have a new land use classification called the coastal area. But in our the zoning ordinance, it references in throughout the county code, it references the environmentally sensitive developing area, and then there's a section of code referred to as the environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone, and they all refer back to the environmentally sensitive developing area. And when the new comprehensive plan is adopted, that land use classification will no longer exist. So the intent of this ordinance is just to replace the names of the environmentally sensitive developing area and the environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone with coastal areas. That is the only intent of this ordinance. The content of those sections is not changing. It is just to replace the names. So the zoning and the land use would match when the plan is adopted.
Questions? More if you read short title.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 62, Article 3, Roman numeral, Section 62-7, Chapter 72, Article 1, Roman numeral, Section 72-4 and 72-5, Chapter 115, Articles 4, 25, and Table 1, and they were by Roman numerals, by amending Sections 115-22, 115-25, 115-182, 115-183, and 115-194.3 to replace all references to the environmentally sensitive development district with coastal area.
If I can introduce it.
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Burton, introduce it. And last.
And the last is regarding the comprehensive plan. After the county council reviewed and endorsed the plan, we sent the plan back to the state. They reviewed it and had a few minor changes. One was to add the sewer tier map that we referenced. They preferred that the map actually be included into the plan. That in our plus letter at state, we stated we would provide update two paragraphs. One made it into the plan, one did not make it into the plan, so we updated that. We also included a note on the future land use map because there was some concerns about the protected lands. So it's just say, please note that the map in the different chapter is the most appropriate map. Very minor changes, nothing substantial, just to address the remaining comments that the state had regarding the comprehensive plan.
And there was a question that there's the letter referenced in the short title, and we did that so that it's limited to just those minor changes. We don't want to, you know, reopen the whole entire plan. And that letter will be part of the record for the public hearing before Planning and Zoning and County Council, so everybody knows what we're talking about.
And to clarify that point, note a comment made earlier, we've not received a letter from the governor. There's no correspondence between us and the governor's office to date. We're just talking to the plus office with
right,
the state.
Yes, and maybe I misunderstood. The letter that's referred to in the ordinance is the one from
the Office of State Planning
that reflected the changes that we need to make.
Right.
Yeah.
They requested it. I didn't hear that.
Yep. Mr. Wilson.
They requested it.
The Office of State Planning.
The Office of State Planning.
Yeah. More of your title.
Yes,
please.
Thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance to amend ordinance number 2620, adopting a comprehensive plan for Sussex County to address changes to the comprehensive plan raised by the State of Delaware Executive Department Office of State Planning Coordination in a letter dated January 18th, 2019.
If I can't introduce it.
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Burton, introduce it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next, Mr. Robertson, subdivision appeal.
Yes, as
Mr. President, Mr. Moore, if you want to, I think.
Yes, if we can just kind of set this up. This is an appeal that we're going to be hearing on Streams Edge subdivision. This is not a standard hearing that we would normally have for planning and zoning matters. This is an appeal from the decision of Planning and Zoning Commission, and by definition, it shall be on the record only, which means there will not be new testimony, there will not be testimony by witnesses or by the public or expert witnesses. It'll be arguments by the legal counsel only. We are not holding a public hearing on this. In accordance with our code The council shall review the record of the hearing, that's what we're going to do today, before the commission, and make a determination in as to whether the commission's decision was, one, the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence, and two, involved the proper interpretation and application of the chapter, and number three, this council shall not substitute its own decision for that of the commission. And we have several options after the hearing. And again, this is not a public hearing. There will be no new evidence or testimony. As I indicated, we will not substitute the council's own decision. The three options are, one, that this council finds that the commission's decision is supported by the evidence in law. B, find that the commission's decision is not supported by the evidence in law. And in that case, you have a couple of options. One, you could just outright reverse the decision of planning and zoning. Or two, you can remand this back to planning and zoning for further review and consideration. Or you could decide that you wanted planning and zoning to have a new hearing on this. Mr. Hudson was a member of the Planning and Zoning Commission at that time, so he is going to be recusing himself from this matter today. I have talked to both legal counsel, both Mr. Robertson, who's the legal counsel for Sussex County Planning and Zoning, and Mr. Tim Willard, who's here on behalf of the applicant. And he had made a timely appeal of this matter, and it would be appropriate, since he is appealing, that he make a presentation first.
Absolutely.
Mr. Willard.
Good morning, members of council, Ms. President. Tim Willard with Fuquay Willard Stevens and Shop. We have an office here in Georgetown and Lewis and Rehoboth. Mr. Moore has given you the procedural posture of this. And I intend just to summarize. Sometimes I don't know how hot you are, if you will. Ultimately, your goal will be to review the record and see if the legal standard's been met or hasn't been met, and then you have that option. We appealed it because we didn't think it was met. So just to give you the 30,000-foot view, that's what I intend to do. And I know you've got a busy schedule, so I'm just going to emphasize a few things.
And Mr. Willard, we did make sure the council does have a copy of your appeal as well.
And your rules really state that you have to state your reasons for when you make the appeal. So it's kind of like a mini brief, although fortunately it's not a big brief. But I submitted, well, let me start out first to say what the record contains right now. You have my appeal letter, which was filed. You also have a rather extensive book that was submitted with the public record. It has about 26 exhibits, and I commend that to you. After the public hearing was held in July, I think it was July something, the Planning Commission kept the record open. And as you get into this, or if you're already into it, you know there are some environmental issues that were involved. They asked the public record be kept open because they wanted to get the feasibility study. So I submitted a letter on August 6th, which included a summary from Duffield Associates, as well as a rather extensive feasibility study, as well as some other documents dealing with a letter from DENREC and also the public notice of the final remediation plan. And to summarize where we are here, this is a parcel right on Robinsonville Road. It's approximately 20-some acres, 21 acres. This was an AR1 cluster subdivision for 42 lots. If you're familiar with that area, it's right next to Tidewater Landing. In addition to the record, which I've already identified, is a transcript of not only the hearing, but also the decision that was made. After we resubmitted and the public record was kept open, Planning Commission denied it pursuant to a motion by Commissioner Hoey Stevenson. And that's her reasons are there. And if you look at our letter of appeal, we go through the various reasons she stated. And to the extent your standard is that their decision was, I think the words they use is illogical or not orderly. We believe that is the case in this case. The history of this project was that it was a lumber yard, just a portion of it, which that's why the environmental issues came up. I think what's perhaps most significant is in 2016, the Planning Commission approved a subdivision on this very lot, and that's Exhibit C in the books. We emphasized that in our public hearing that it was already approved. As you can see, if you go back there, the portion of the property that had environmental issues was a phase two and wasn't completed. And the condition of the Planning Commission's approval in 2016 was that it would be remediated. And we thought that was significant because we were asking for similar subdivision, but with much more extensive environmental testing and also a remediation plan that was approved by DENREC. And that was one argument we made in our appeal, that they already approved it once, and our application actually secured this area much more than the previous application. So it was illogical not to allow us to go ahead with the remediation again. An overlying argument we have on this appeal is we realize the Planning Commission has broad discretion and their language is rather broad as far as subdivisions, but we think in this particular case, since DENREC had their teeth into this land significantly with a remediation plan, you'll see the terms SIRS, they've been testing it for years, that it was their province. And at the end of the day, they said, if you do this, then this will be fine for residential purposes. Specifically, as to some of the arguments made in the motion by Ms. Hohe, which was voted unanimously, in paragraph 3, she says that there are areas that are going to have to be addressed because of the different areas where they found some contaminants due to the lumber facility. And quite simply, that was back in the 70s or even 60s when they treated lumber to make it last longer, so it had some issues in it. And when you look at the maps in this, if you do, and we compel you to do that, you'll see there's an area called OU 1 or 2, I'm sorry, which is a small area of less than a half an acre where actually the operation took place, and that's where most of the contaminants were. There's a larger area called OU 1, which is 6 acres, and they found 3 hot spots there, and there were less concentrated and less, if I may, significant chemicals there. They said they might have been caused by burning, like barns burning down, things like that. She indicated, though, in her motion that there were multiple areas, but there was only one, and it was 1.25 acres. In paragraph 4, the commissioner stated that there's discrepancy in the alternative to clean up this portion of property, stating that it was over 1,000 cubic feet, when it's clear from the record that there are only about a little shy of 400 cubic feet that were going to be moved to the area that was going to be capped. Okay, if I'm getting ahead of myself, the whole overall remediation plan is that they were going to put some of this soil that was not in this small area of 1 acre on that area and cap it and then put soil on top of it, and it would just be open space and it would be safe because it wouldn't leach. And that was the plan. In paragraph 5, excuse me one second, she refers to the DENREC letter indicating that it was not suitable, and you can see in their letters, and I'm not going to quote them all, that the whole purpose of what DENREC was doing to say that this property was suitable for residential development. So it directly contradicts what she was asking for there. In another portion of her motion, she indicates that DENREC's statement, the cap would preclude casual contact or indigestion of the soils by site occupants or trespassers, but would not necessarily be appropriate for residential setting due to the requirements for maintenance necessary. Well, what that statement is from DENREC is what they're doing precludes any problem with it, but they shouldn't build on this portion of property, the 1.25 acres. In the submitted plan, it would be capped, permanent open space, and a maintenance agreement to take care of it. which after the original remediation is done, wouldn't be significant. So that really didn't make sense to us as far as what she was saying there. In her paragraph 7 of the motion, there's some debate on this, and you can see it if you read the transcript as well. There was discussion about why not just take it off site. And Ms. Hoey Stevenson said, argued that, and there was a engineer here from Duffield, Brian Lyncha, I think is how you pronounce his name, and I compel his testimony to you as well. He said, Delaware's landfills wouldn't take it because they don't cap this material. And there was some discussion it would have to be taken out of state. And ultimately, when the motion was made, it was made, and you can read the paragraph 7, the commissioner prepped. She concludes that if Delaware landfills will not take the material, then it's not appropriate for residential use. That's really not an accurate statement because it wouldn't be used in any means. It would be confined and protected. So that didn't make sense to us and seemed illogical. Finally, when she points to section 9916, which refers to land unsuitable for development because of the features may be harmful to the safety, health, and in general welfare of the present and future inhabitants. However, that same section provides that unless adequate methods are formulated and approved to solve the problems. And that's exactly what happened by the agency that's in required to do that in this case. Finally, in paragraph 9, she relies on 99.9C to deny the project. She maintains that the proposed subdivision cannot be integrated into existing terrain and surrounding landscape because of the soils. It had already been approved in 2016 as part of that attachment. And history on that is, why didn't they go forward with it? The previous developer just chose not to. And it may have been because they wouldn't take it the extra distance to hire the engineer and to get the remediation plan. Now, I know that you are limited just to the record, and it's rather extensive, and your time is significant or valuable here today. But I do, before you make a decision, there's certain things I think you should look at. And on my August 6th correspondence to the county, which was the follow-up, there's a letter in there from Denrec, and there's also a letter from Duffield, as was. If you're like me, you might get lost in the feasibility thing because it's very technical. In short, there were various alternatives suggested by the engineering firm. There were multiple tests done, and there were multiple alternatives that were suggested. Denrec embraced alternative 7, and since this was denied, that effort has still gone forward. In fact, on August 6th, when I submitted the supplemental material, the final date had expired for the public notice for the remediation plan. That plan goes to the public, and there was no opposition, so it was finally accepted. To date, Soil Conservation District has permitted this change of use. And actually, Mr. Mike Daniels is here, who's the principal and the applicant. If you have questions, I'm maybe not appropriate. So he's gone forward with cleaning up the property pursuant to Denrec's requirement. So in light of all that facts and evidence, which is in the record, it seems illogical and out of the ordinary for them to solely deny this plan based of this province that Denrec had that, quite frankly, they'd gone over the top to satisfy, and they still intend to. Once that it's finally done, that is the soils moved to this area and capped, then they have something called, I always get this wrong, it's a certificate of completion of remedy. And you may have heard it before, because this is not, there are other instances in the county where Denrec has remediated property and made it suitable for some kind of use. And I haven't offered that in this presentation, but ultimately it might be significant, so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your attention. Thank you.
Sure thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Robertson.
Mr. President, members of council, sort of strange being up here on this side arguing a case to you all, but I welcome the opportunity. For the record, Vince Robertson with the law firm of Parkowski, Gurk, and Swayze. There's no way to make this particularly interesting, but what I've got to do is go through, as Mr. Willard did, and state what's on the record and what supports the decision. As Mr. Moore stated, you need to determine if the Commission's decision was the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence and involved the proper interpretation of the application of Chapter 99 of our county code. So there's sort of a question that's sort of underlying all this. If DENREC has a remediation plan, is it binding on the county? But keep in mind, that's really not the question that's before you all today. The question is whether the record supports the Commission's denial and whether it passes muster under Chapter 99. And I think based on what I'm going to describe to you, based on the record that we had before P&Z, I'm confident that you're going to find that the Commission's decision was based on an orderly and logical review of the evidence. So a little bit of an overview. Mr. Willard touched on some of this. This was denied by the Commission after it gave a lot of consideration to the information on the record. As Mr. Willard stated, there is a transcript of the public hearing, and you'll see from that transcript that the Commission did have a lot of questions during the hearing on the subdivision, the remediation, how it interacted with future lot owners, the homeowner association, et cetera. Ultimately, the Commission denied the application for the reasons stated in its motion, which included strong concerns about the location being a brownfield site that contains hazardous materials that are not compatible with residential uses. So as Mr. Willard stated, this was the site of a prior application that was approved. For example, in 2009, it was approved for MR townhouses, and that's at page 7 of the transcript. At that time, though, according to this applicant, the contaminated area was only about 0.28 acres, and that ran from 2009 to 2012 or beyond that during the life of that application. That's actually at page 32 and 33 of the transcript. Then DENREC went back and looked at the site. It, as Mr. Willard stated, they expanded the area that's there to approximately 6 acres that should have a remediation project on it, and that's at page 8 and 9 of the transcript. So basically, it went from 1.3% of the site up to 28% of the site that the Commission was now considering that required remediation. During the hearing, the applicant went through all sorts of explanations about what they're planning to do. But from the start, the Commission had questions and concerns right from really the beginning of the presentation. And I'm going to start with the plans themselves. And Ms. Cornwell, if you could get the subdivision site plan up. So there's actually three. And I'm going to let her drive this because I'm never on this side of the podium working these things. So we were talking about the remediation. And the first thing that was evident to the Commission, there was areas discussed about where the hot spots were. And there was reference to lot numbers. And for example, there was lots 10, 11, 12, 13, lots 4, 3, 2, 1, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. But at the time, and you'll see where those numbers are on that site plan and the locations of them. Ms. Cornwell, if you want to flip to the color rendering. We were shown this plan, which is also part of the record. And you'll see that those reference lots 33, 32, 31, 30, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, and 42, and up top, 29, 28, and 27. Nobody had a comfort level about what lots we were talking about, where these hot spots were, based on the information submitted by the applicant's own engineer. And I will tell you, we don't have it up on the screen today, but there was a plan that was used in the record that's dated, I can see it, February 6th. And it actually shows different numbers and lots in different areas. The lot up there that's identified as lot 29 and another number on the other plan doesn't exist on this plan. There's lots over here that are in different locations. For the start, there was real concern about the location of the contaminated soil and the information that was being provided to the Commission, which is self-evident. As Ms. Hoey Stevenson stated during this discussion, that it's a real health, safety, and welfare issue for Sussex County to get this information right. With regard to that plan, too, it also shows landscaping up there where the cursor is. However, at the time that we were seeing that site plan, the applications engineer who drew the plan stated that there can't be any trees. All the trees had to be removed. And then their environmental consultant stated that the trees have to be removed. And that was at pages 22 of the transcript and 42 of the transcript. So again, the commission's looking at a landscape plan that shows landscaping in an area that there's testimony about that you can't have any landscaping in. So again, this was a concern about the health, safety, and welfare of Sussex County, and frankly, you know, what are we to believe with regard to the information on the record and what's true and accurate about these the remediation plan. So the next thing was Mr. Hopkins, who I think you know has some idea about how site work works. He had concerns about how the contaminated area would be treated. And it basically got down to, he indicated that it would probably be about 20 dump truck loads of contaminated soil. And that's at page 42 of the transcript. He asked, why don't you just haul it away? The response was, cost, cost, cost. That's the one reason. And that's at page 42. And there was a further explanation. Hauling them away and landfilling them may be an option, but that would have to be an out-of-state landfill, and the transportation really jacks up the cost. So Mr. Hopkins asked, so why do you have to haul it out of state? And again, the response was, I don't know that there are any local landfills that would accept this material. There was even the testimony confirming that other states take it, and those are all at pages 43 of the transcript. Mr. Hopkins asked the question, well, if no local landfills will accept it, why would somebody want it in their backyard? Again, that's at page 43. Since no local landfills would accept it, the testimony was that the applicant intends to create its own landfill site on this site, although they also testified that they had not even fully designed how they were going to accomplish the on-site landfill. And that's at page 47 of the transcript. Again, there was further discussion, and it just reiterated that other states might take the contaminated material, but they are choosing to leave it on site because of the cost consideration. And there was testimony that it would be hundreds of thousands of dollars for only 18 dump truck loads. And that was at page 46 of the transcript. Mr. Hudson had concerns about how the contaminated soil would be covered at page 41 of the transcript, to which the applicant's consultant explained that the cover was not even designed yet. So what we got down to was the fact that in the next phase of the discussion, who's going to own it? And that wasn't even clear. It may be owned by the developer. It may be purchased by the homeowners association. Either way, there was going to have to be a long-term plan put into effect by DENREC on it. And so taking that a step further, if the developer or someone else owns it, it's one fourth of the entire site. And recall that they proposed 42 lots on 20 acres, which is the maximum density you can get on 20 acres. This sort of never came up because it was denied, but if someone else owns the acreage, that really isn't even part of the subdivision. So that would mean that you don't get your maximum density of 42 lots because you don't have 20 acres that you can use to get your density from. It's basically a donut hole carved out that somebody else would have to maintain, that the homeowners would have to be subject to a third party maintenance of. If the homeowners association owns it, they would be saddled with the DENREC long-term plan, ongoing remediation, monitoring and maintenance of what amounts to a landfill, as Mr. Hopkins got from the testimony. That does not promote the health, safety, and welfare of the future residents of the development or Sussex County. Basically, what you're doing is putting the burden of monitoring a toxic landfill on 42 homeowners. So what I'd like to do now, because my job is to show that the motion was the product of an orderly and logical decision-making process based on the record. Ms. Cornell, if you could just put the motion up.
Can we ask a question?
You could ask a question, yes, as long as it's about the record.
What does contaminated soil about it? What is it? What kind of contamination is it?
So, Mr. Wilson, I can get to that, although basically DENREC in their 2018 amended proposed plan, which is part of the record, identified it as hazardous substances. And they identified elevated concentrations, and I apologize, I'm going to butcher these pronouncements, but hexavalent chromium in shallow and deep soil as well as the groundwater. And there was it's listed in here, chromium, arsenic, and thallium at concentrations greater than state standards. So this wasn't like we see in some brownfield sites where it's dumping and other debris, you know, like old logs and things like that. These were actually chemicals that Denrec said are confirmed are hazardous substances.
So it's an old dump.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I believe Mr. Willard had indicated in his presentation, a record indicated that it was an area where lumber had been treated at one point materials in order to make it last longer with soil contact.
Yeah, no, that's correct. That's correct. The things that were dumped as a result of that or went into the soils as a result of that.
Right.
So going through the motion, the first one was as an application for 42 lots designed as a cluster subdivision on approximately 20 acres that's zoned AR1. There's no dispute over that. Again, that's the maximum density that you can get on the site. That's assuming, again, that the HOA owns the entire site in that area, because, again, if you carve that out of the subdivision, it's not really part of the subdivision. The site includes approximately 5.6 acres of land formerly utilized for lumber treatment. That's true. That's at pages 8 and 9 of the transcript. This is approximately 1/4 of the entire Streams Edge site. Again, that's a true statement. That's just based on the math. Within this acreage are several identified hot spots containing hexavalent chromium, arsenic, and thallium at concentrations greater than state standards. Again, that comes straight from Denrec's 2018 amended proposed plan submitted by the applicant, and that report confirms that these are hazardous substances. The next line, according to information supplied by the applicant, these pose unacceptable risk exposure scenarios for residential uses, outdoor workers, and recreation. I'm going to elaborate on that because that's a significant statement. The 2018 amended proposed plan submitted by the applicant stated that, one, the deep soil concentrations of arsenic was reported above the Denrec SIRS, which is Site Investigation Research Branch, screening levels, and the resulting risks exceed the Denrec SIRS level of acceptable risk to future residential use. That's at page 2 of that report. Two, and this is a quote, groundwater samples collected during the 2015 investigation and beyond reported concentrations of total chromium, hexavalent chromium, iron, manganese, and cobalt, which pose an unacceptable risk to potential residential and commercial use. That was at page 2 of that report. Three, a supplemental remedial investigation of OU1 in 2017 also identified elevated concentrations of hexavalent chromium in shallow and deep soil as well as the groundwater. The risk posed by concentrations of hazardous chemicals reported in OU1 exceeds the acceptable risk to potential residential use. And that was at page 2 of that report. The third item was on the motion. The proposed remedy for the soils includes removing the soils from the various hotspots on the site and relocating them to the proposed open space areas within the development where they would be capped with limitations on the use of the open space. That's a true statement. These contaminated soils would remain within the development to be the future burden of the HOA and something that DNR&C won't allow to occur within its own landfills. And the Duffield report that was submitted by the applicant reiterated or confirmed that the proposed plan will not alter the volume or toxicity of the substances of environmental concern. And that was at page 18 of the Duffield report from the applicant. As I mentioned at the beginning, there were concerns about information that was supplied, and that's reflected in the fourth item. There appear to be inconsistencies of the volume of the contaminated soils that need to be removed. One report identifies 396 cubic yards of material, and that comes from the Duffield report that the applicant submitted, while another identifies 1,027 cubic yards of material that must be removed. That comes from the January 31 feasibility study that was revised May 21st at page 11 that was submitted by the applicant. And it's important to note, Mr. Willard stated that today and in his report, the 396 cubic yards is to be relocated to the area where the 1,027 cubic yard location would be and capped together. He says that the 1,027 cubic yards has not been proposed for removal, only containment. All I can say that is the Duffield report says at page 11, and this is the applicant's own report, the estimated volume of soils that would be removed is approximately 1,027 cubic yards. So we're just going based on what the applicant's information said. They were removing 1,027, not 396. Other concerns were that the depth of the report stated the soils would be raised 3 inches, when the feasibility study said 6.6 inches, and that's at page 11 of that. The Duffield report indicated that it was 33 dump truck loads when there was 18 to 20 in the testimony. And then there was even questions about the area. It was originally a 0.28 acre area. It ballooned to about a 5.6 acre area. And then even in Denrec's amended plan of remedial action, it went to 7 acres. So no, number four talks about inconsistency of volume, but you can see it's volume and acreage, cubic yards, and even height from the record that the commission had to consider. According to the applicant, number five, according to the applicant's own report, the relocation of these contaminated soils will not alter the volume or toxicity of the substances of environmental concern. The applicant does not propose removing or even reducing the volume of the contaminated soils. And the final sentence, it is not appropriate to allow these toxic substances to remain within the proposed subdivision. The commission had concerns about this proposed remedy of leaving everything in the subdivision because, one, it creates a landfill within a residential subdivision where even the state of Delaware would not allow it to occur on its own landfill sites. And again, that relates back to the testimony at pages 42 and 43. It would require a long-term stewardship plan of the landfill site, a burden on an HOA. The long-term plan, and this is significant too, the long-term plan that was proposed would limit any uses solely to non-residential type uses permitted within commercial, manufacturing, or industrial districts. This is AR1 land, or MR1 land, so zoned residential. Commercial, manufacturing, or industrial districts aren't uses that are allowed within a residential subdivision. Six, the applicant's own report, as approved by the Department of Natural Resources, concludes that the cap would preclude casual contact or indigestion or ingestion of soils by site occupants or trespassers, recreators, but would not necessarily be appropriate in a residential setting due to requirements for maintenance and necessary restrictions regarding excavations in the cap area. Again, not necessarily appropriate in a residential setting. That's exactly what this application was for. It was for a subdivision. All that is true and on the record, and it comes from page 14 of the Duffield report. Number seven, in response to questioning from the commission, the applicant's representative stated that the Delaware landfills will not accept the contaminated materials. If the state's landfills will not take these materials, it is not appropriate for them to remain within the subdivision as a potential future hazard to the residents there. That's a true statement and confirms the discussion that was in the transcript on pages 42 and 43 between Mr. Hopkins and the applicant's consultants. I note that Mr. Willard in his letter stated at page 4, he says, this proposed development may be the only way to have the site remediated. That's not the case. They stated that they could haul it off the site to an out-of-state landfill, but they chose not to do that for cost. It was purely an economic decision, not for what's best for residents of Sussex County or the subdivision. Section 9916 of the Sussex County Subdivision Code states that land unsuitable for development because of features which would be reasonably harmful to the safety, health, and general welfare of the present or future inhabitants of the subdivision shall not be subdivided or developed unless adequate methods are formulated and approved to solve the problems created by the conditions. And then it goes on to say why they felt that they weren't solved. So the appropriate term and the significant term in that phrase is whether there's adequate methods are formulated. The commission concluded that there were not adequate methods. There was uncertainty about the size of the areas we talked about, uncertainty about the volume of the contaminants, the nature of the contaminants, which were harmful and hazardous, the proposed remedy that the applicant's consultant admitted has not fully been designed, that keeping the soils on the sites not consistent with residential uses, that Denrec wouldn't even take these soils, even though it has professional licensed folks that would manage them, and then even the fact that it would be the burden on a future HOA. And finally, Denrec stated in its June 6th letter that all of its assumptions are based on the fundamental assumption that the remediation is successful in the first place. So there was all this sort of built upon a hope that it would work later on, and all these concerns and uncertainties and conflicting information in the record. Based on that, I think the commission was right to find that there were not adequate methods formulated and approved to solve the problems created by this subdivision. And then the last one, except for the conclusion, is number 9, whether the items of Section 99.9C were adequately addressed. The first one is, with the contaminated soils, the proposed subdivision cannot be integrated into the existing terrain and surrounding landscape. I'll just say this. DENREC didn't want these soils integrated into its own landfills. How can you integrate those soils into a subdivision? I think that one's satisfied. The relocation of the contaminated soils requires extensive soil removal and grade changes. That's 99.9C5. And we had in the record it's anywhere from 3 inches to 6.6 inches of grade changing, depending on what's accurate, or 18 to 33 dump truck loads, or 0.28 acres, or 5.6 acres. So either way, there was a lot that was not consistent with the rest of the subdivision. And finally, with regard to 99.9C6 and 12, the contaminated soils would have come from the lots in the first place, and the adverse impacts of having a landfill that the state won't even take within the subdivision are self-evident from the record. And the adverse impact of either having a hazardous material site within your subdivision that you don't control, if the developer keeps it, or one that the HOA has to maintain if it accepts it, are objectionable. Again, neither 99.9C6 or 12 were satisfied. So basically, the final one, number 10, was the conclusion that for all those reasons, it's not appropriate to approve the subdivision. And I know that was kind of long and boring and a lot of citations to the record, but it's important for you to understand that this decision was made by the commission after considering everything that had been provided by the applicant, all the inconsistencies, the data, the concerns about having a landfill that DENREC won't take within a residential subdivision. Again, going back to my initial statement, DENREC may say this remediation plan's okay, perhaps because they don't want it on their own landfills, but that's not really the threshold here. It's whether, even if we assume that everything was right and the plans weren't inconsistent and the soils in the area weren't inconsistent, is it appropriate to have this within a residential subdivision? And I think after you sort of heard everything that I've talked about, you'll find that it was, and I hope you'll find that it was, the product of an orderly and logical review of the evidence, and there was enough information on the record to support the commission's decision. So thank you. I apologize for being boring, but you know, we have to go through the transcript and all the information in the record. That's part of the deal with one of these appeal hearings.
So if we do enough area, this contaminated area, what are we going to do about it? What's going to happen to it?
So that's a good question, Mr. Wilson. I don't know what DENREC would ultimately do about it, but I think a better question is who should do something about it. Do we want some future residents of the 42-lot subdivision to be the ones that have to end up monitoring and maintaining this remediation plan for the amount of time into the future?
In other words, what's going to happen if it stays that during the rain, all the other things are going to leach more, going to leach further underground?
You know, Mr. Wilson, that may be true, but again, I go back to, do you think a 42-lot homeowners association is the one that also should be saddled with fixing that? You know, and whether it's appropriate to put 42 lots around something like that. That was really the question before the commission.
Yeah, I understand, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would vote for that, but I'm just,
yeah.
What about what's going to happen when you don't do nothing with it at all? Well, you don't do nothing, just leave it lay. What's going to happen?
Well, I'm sure, you know, there's certainly probably more appropriate uses for the land than a 42-lot subdivision, but we had to deal with
HOA,
what was on the record.
Is HOA going to remove it?
What's that?
Is HOA going to have to remove this?
Well, that was part of the uncertainty that came up on the record. They talked about, when we went through it, well, it'll be open space, and they can use it as open space. And then on the one hand, they said, well, the developer or somebody else is going to own it. Well, then you start thinking, well, if somebody else owns it, is it really part of the subdivision? Can anybody really use it at that point? So that's the one hand. Then they said, well, for a dollar, the developer could sell it to the homeowners association.
Right.
And then the homeowners association would be responsible for DENREC's long-term
right.
plan. You know, it just, there was uncertainty on top of uncertainty as we went through this.
So the owner just really, really wants to get rid of it for free, in a sense speaking.
Potentially. And now, truth be told, there was information in the record that the developer, if they did give it to the homeowner association, would somehow fund it, but that wasn't, you know, not clearly spelled out either. So.
Good. Thank you.
Any more questions?
Was there anything else, Mr. Vincent, Mr. Willard, any rebuttal? Typically, there would be the opportunity if you did want to rebut.
Sorry.
And it would be strictly on what Mr. Robertson indicated.
Yeah, and to some extent, I think it's important to focus on the motion, which the motion was concentrated on the environmental issue. And when Mr. Robertson said, you know, an overriding issue here is the relationship between the county and DENREC. So when your code says unless adequate precautions or whatever it says are achieved, and DENREC spent a lot of time and a lot of effort, as did the applicant, to come up with a plan that worked and accepted it and gave it public notice, and everybody chimed in, and they've monitored this property for years, it's basically the county saying, we don't care, we can trump that. And I think that is some concern. And I don't say that lightly, and this record is thick in all the testing that was done. It's kind of an opposition's, I don't want to say dream, but there's a 45-page, how long is it, Duffield report. And there are 10 alternatives in there about how to make this safe. And the applicant did spend significant money to get that report and to figure out how to do it. DENREC embraced alternative 7. Some of the things cited by Mr. Robertson were in different alternatives, and so that is somewhat confusing. Alternative 7 is what was accepted by DENREC, was given public notice, and is currently being implemented, where it says, following successful removal of the soils, much of the O2 would be suitable for residential use. So as far as alternative 7 is concerned, it would, and if you look at, and again, you probably, it's tab 7 of that report where it lists the amount. It would be a little south of 400 cubic feet, which would have to be moved to that very small portion and capped. And that would protect it from leaching and make it safe. As far as the future maintenance of this, the lion's share of all this work is now. It's the engineering report, the capping, and filling that. That capped area, which is only a little over 1 acre, would be topped with soil that could be planted. And I understand he pointed out the landscape map looked like trees coming in there, but the record would reflect that it could be planted with just not deep root things, more like a meadow or something like that. So it could be planted. I think at the end of the day, DENREC and the applicant has bent over backwards to try to clean this property up right. And, you know, the fact that maybe you could do it somehow else, I mean, I don't know what the problem is. I know money is the solution. That's a true statement. But in this particular case, they went to the agency that has jurisdiction of this, and they said, if we were going to clean this up, well, how do we do it? Duffield came up with 10 solutions. DENREC embraced one. They put it out to public opinion, and it was accepted. And the only people that didn't accept it was the Planning Commission. And we think that was inappropriate, or according to the statute, illogical. That's all I have. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Did you have any response to that, Mr. Robertson? And then we'll wrap up.
If I may, Mr. Moore, I know there's one other thing. A certificate of completion and remedy is the final say with DENREC, because they monitor how this is being done, and that's their final say and certificate. It's sort of the gold standard of said, okay, this is good. After that, you know, just like they inventoried this property in the 80s and 90s, that the monitoring would take place, but as time goes on, the monitoring time being a decade or two, it's less infrequent because they're not sowing any leaching or anything like that, which should be the case. Again, this property is on central sewer and also central water.
Thank you.
I'll just be very brief. Just, you know, again, the commission and you all have to go by what's on the record. And, you know, I think you'll reach the conclusion that, you know, regardless of what we're talking about with DENREC, it still has to be on the record and supported by Chapter 99. And I think you'll see from what the commission had to deal with, the record was not clear. You know, we're not talking about a brownfield site where there's, you know, stumps or something in there. These are serious contaminants. You know, and when you have all these discrepancies about how much and where and sizes, and the plans aren't even right. You don't get off on the right foot. That's what the record was, and that's what the commission had to deal with. Do we have a record that supports us approving this? And they found that they did not. You know, and I hear what Mr. Willard's stating about what Denrec said, you know, about residential use, and that was a distinction that was sort of made during the hearing, and it's in the record, that they were taking soils from where lots would go, where these contaminants were, and they were relocating to another point within a residential subdivision. So it's a true statement that we're moving this stuff from where the residential dwellings were, but we're just moving it to a place within a residential subdivision. And all throughout the record, it stated that, you know, these types of things were not compatible with residential uses. So again, I just hope that, you know, you'll take into consideration the thought and deliberations that the commission made on this. It was a tough one. And uphold the commission's denial.
Okay. Thank you.
Is this salt tree lumber in there?
Excuse me? Is this
salt tree lumber that's contaminated everything?
You know, it was in the record. It was an older lumber mill where they were treating the lumber, and it was those chemicals that we talked about. Whether I'm not a scientist to say whether that was salt treated lumber or not, but it was, when you're talking about arsenic and things like that, it's pretty serious.
That's what's used in salt treated lumber,
right?
Arsenic.
Okay, thank you. At this point, the council has concluded its hearing on the appeal on this matter, Mr. President. I think because just the sheer amount of material that we have in the record and the presentation, good presentations by both legal counsel, that it'd be appropriate to defer on this matter so council can take a look at it under advisement.
Okay, motion to defer.
Motion to defer.
Motion, Mr. Burton.
Second.
Second, Mr. Riley, to defer on the subdivision appeal. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
I believe motion carried. Thank you, sir.
I think we're going to look at it.
Thank you.
Grant request, Ms. Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have three grants for your consideration. The first one is Woodland Schoolhouse Association. They're requesting $5,000 to help with the restoration of the schoolhouse. The school will be used as a stop on the highway by the Heritage Byways Trail to address the historical impact of the area of the woodland. There have been no past grants for the restoration. Last grant received to the organization was Woodland Heritage Festival. Mr. Vincent placed on the agenda.
I see. Ms. Steinbusen, all you care to come down and address council, or are you just good to sitting there? You haven't got to come down. It's up to you. You're good. Okay. It's up to you.
The Woodland Schoolhouse is located on Sussex County Park that the county owns. And on that park, there was a building, and come to find out, the front of the building was the old schoolhouse. In the olden days, every 8 miles had a schoolhouse. We're the only second schoolhouse left. The other one is the Godwin Schoolhouse in Millsboro. We are not fortunate enough to have all the artifacts that they have. But what we want to do is to come up with a hands-on museum for kids in the area. I'm a retired school teacher, and with the state standards and everything, a fourth grade is a good beginning. Even though the schoolhouse is not finished, we have kids, about 150 kids coming out in May to do a hands-on study of the area. And then we have partnered with the Heritage Trails, we have partnered with the FFA of Seaford, and they will be doing some environmental studies out there also. What we do, we go through Mr. Lawson and Mr. Vincent for what we plan on doing. Western, the tourism of Sussex County, we're on their trail already. So they do stop and they do talk. We did have a festival with over 1,200 people in September. That brings us in with a little revenue. The Delaware State Preservation Group gave us $3,000 for materials. The Kiwanis of Seaford gave us $1,000. Kevin Thawley of REMAX gave us $500, and we've had little donations from the community. What we're asking for, this past November 3rd, the country musicians from around the area held a concert, and they donated $5,000 to our cause. We need roughly about $19,000 for this, to add a portico and to do the foundation and the outside of the schoolhouse. And we're requesting a match for that, and we will have enough money to do the portico and the foundation. We have applied to other grants locally, and we haven't heard from anything yet. But this is phase two, and then we'll go on to do phase three. But kids will be coming out. If you're not familiar with Woodland, it's about 5 miles west of Seaford. It has the Woodland Ferry. We're proud to say our church is 75 years old. Those are already open. That ferry, at least 100 cars come off every day when it's running. And it's another story. And then Representative Dan Short okayed us for a historical site. We can't be on the National Register because we're not, we don't have the equipment. Some of the things we had to tear down makes the schoolhouse not satisfied for that, but we are a historical site. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. If someone would make the motion to grant $1,000 from my council MAC account.
I'll make a motion.
Motion, Mr. Wilson.
I'll second.
Second, Mr. Riley. Grant $1,000 from my council MAC account to Woodland Schoolhouse Association for renovations. Questions on the motion?
Mr. President.
Mr. Riley.
Could I match your?
Oh, you can do what you want to do.
I'd be happy to match it.
Okay. Let's back up on this then. We got a motion, Mr. Riley. Second, Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
To grant $2,000 to the Woodland Schoolhouse Association for renovations, being $1,000 from my council MAC account. $1,000, Mr. Riley's council MAC account. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
I'm yes. Motion carried. Next.
I'm glad to help you spend your money.
The next one is Laurel Elementary Schools requesting support for their 5K wellness run and walk. Funds from this event are used for their new school. Last grant received was $500, which was $250 from Mr. Arlett and $250 from Mr. Vincent.
You want to do the same thing, Mr. Riley, or I'll do it all if you don't.
Yeah, I'll move to do the same thing.
Okay, motion, Mr. Riley. Second, Mr. Wilson.
Hey.
To grant $500 to Laurel Elementary School for their 5K run wellness fundraiser, being $250 from my council bank account, $250 Mr. Riley's council bank account. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
I have a yes. Motion carried. Next.
Okay, the last one is the Cape Henlopen Senior Center is requesting $1,550 for their annual Rehoboth Concert Band fundraiser. Last grant received was $1,300 from Mr. Cole. Mr. Hudson placed on the agenda.
Mr. Hudson.
I would do that, yes.
Same thing?
Yep.
Motion, Mr. Hudson. Second, Mr. Burton to grant $1,300.
Yes, sir.
To the Cape Henlopen Senior Center for Rehoboth Concert Band fundraiser. From Mr. Hudson's council MAC account. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
I have a yes. Motion carried. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mr. Moore, introduction proposed zoning ordinances.
Yes, Mr. President, we have several. The first one is in Mr. Burton's district, an ordinance granting conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a catering business to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, containing 1.008 acres, more or less. That's 1.08.
I'll introduce it. Mr. Burton introduces it.
And the next one is in Mr. Riley's district, an ordinance granting conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for an event venue to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 3.38 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it. Mr. Riley introduces it.
The next one is in Mr. Burton's district, an ordinance granting conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for an automotive repair business to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, containing 0.75 acre, more or less.
I'll introduce it. Mr. Burton introduces it.
And the last one is in Mr. Wilson's district, an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to a B2 business community district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Georgetown 100, Sussex County, containing 0.827 acre, more or less.
Introduce it.
Mr. Wilson introduces it.
That is all, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Council member comments.
How far am I going?
Council member comments. I will say that I was appointed back in the summer, I guess, to the Governor's Complete Count Commission, which is to do with the census for 2020. And it appears it only suits them to meet on Tuesdays. So I have designated Mr. Costello to be my representative on that commission. He's going there, in fact, this afternoon, 1 o'clock, for his third meeting he's going to, so. And then motion to go to executive session for land acquisition and pending litigation.
So move.
Motion, Mr. Hudson.
Second.
Second, Mr. Burton. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
I will, yes. We're now in executive session. We'll go downstairs for those land acquisition and pending litigation.